Nixon's trip to China was a turning point in East-West relations. It was the great triumph of Nixon's presidency, and it even inspired an opera. Margaret McMillan has written a book about Nixon's visit to China. It's called Nixon and Mao, The Week That Changed the World.
It's one of those moments where you remember where you were, because it was such an unlikely and previously inconceivable spectacle to think that Nixon was there standing in Beijing in the Forbidden City on the Great Wall. It seemed so unlikely.
Was it really so radical?
Yes, it was. And I think that's why Nixon going to China has become a sort of catchphrase for a statesman doing something that is bold, represents a really decisive change in foreign policy. You could say that the time was right. I think some of the old anti-communist, particularly anti-Chinese communist fervor in the United States had died down. But I think it took Nixon to say, okay, I'm going to do it.
What was the relationship really like at that time? Because I think that may be the part that a lot of people don't remember very clearly. We had essentially the three superpowers, but China wasn't considered on quite the same level as the United States and the Soviet Union, was it?
No, China really was not considered a superpower at all, and that was partly because it was economically and militarily backward, but also because in the 60s it had essentially taken itself off the world stage. It had turned inwards, and the convulsions of the Cultural Revolution had really prevented it from playing any sort of part in the world. The other thing that I think is probably necessary to remind people is that really before Nixon began thinking the unthinkable, there was no relationship between the People's Republic of China and the United States, and there hadn't been one since 1949.
We had fought a war with them in Korea, although not directly, so there had been some contact during all that time. And the anti-communist feeling in the United States, as you point out, was strong, although beginning to wane, which is a curious thing at the time of the Vietnam War, that there should be an easing of that at a time when otherwise you'd think it would be growing.
I think what Americans were now beginning to be able to do was to distinguish between various sorts of communists. And it was quite clear that the Soviet Union and China, although they were both communist nations, had fallen out. It was very public. And in fact, in the summer of 1969, there were armed clashes along the common border. And I think the United States had also got used to dealing with the Soviet Union. And so going to China, to talking to another communist power, I think was no longer conceptually or intellectually as difficult as it might have been at the beginning of the 1950s.
Why would the Nixon administration be interested in having any relationship with China? What was in it for Richard Nixon?
Well, I think a number of things were in it for Richard Nixon. At a personal level, it was a very dramatic moment which helped to portray him as a world statesman on the world stage, which was something he very much wanted to do. And of course, 1972, the year he went to China, was an election year. But I think it was much more than any sort of personal desire on Nixon's part. I think what it was a recognition by Nixon that if the Americans could establish a relationship with China, it would put real pressure on the Soviet Union and really transform the nature of the Cold War, because the Soviets would suddenly have to start to think about another flank. It would also, or so Nixon hoped, help the United States to get out of Vietnam. In this, in fact, he was wrong, but what he thought was that the Chinese communists, being the sort of big brother of the North Vietnamese communists, would put pressure on the North Vietnamese to negotiate more seriously than they had been with the United States and enable the United States to get out of Vietnam.
Now, you've talked about what was in this for Nixon. What about for China? Was this a time when they were suddenly ready to step onto the world stage again?
Yes, I think they were. China had become dangerously isolated in the course of the 1960s. I mean, they were on bad terms with virtually all their neighbors. They'd fought a war with India at the beginning of the 60s. They had really no relationship with Japan or South Korea. They were on very bad terms indeed with the Soviet Union. In fact, so dangerously bad were they that the Chinese feared with very good reason that the Soviets were planning a sneak nuclear attack in the fall of 1969. And so I think for Mao, to save the revolution and to protect China, the idea of an opening to the United States began to seem more and more appealing.
Of course, there's also the question at this point of Taiwan, a question that still exists today and is nowhere near settled. Was part of the Chinese hope that meeting with Nixon, opening this discussion with the United States, would change their relationship with Taiwan?
Oh, it certainly was part of the Chinese hope. I mean, what the Americans, I think, didn't realize until they really started to talk to the Chinese was that Taiwan was absolutely central in Chinese thinking. I mean, from the Chinese point of view then and indeed now, the existence of Taiwan as an independent state out there in the Pacific represents an unfinished part of bringing China back into being a whole country again. And that's what they wanted. When they talked to the Americans, they made it perfectly clear that they wanted the United States to pull all of its troops out of Taiwan. They wanted the United States to abrogate its defensive treaty with Taiwan. They wanted the United States to cut diplomatic ties with Taiwan. They got part of that.
It's interesting to look back on this, isn't it? Because it, the more you talk about it, the more you describe the things that each party brought to the table and the people who were involved, they came with certain expectations, only a few of which were met. And yet this sits as this extraordinary moment when all of a sudden things became possible.
But I think in a successful negotiation, neither side gets exactly what it wants. I mean, the success of a negotiation is in both sides getting some, so they feel at least content with what they've got, and the door is left open for further negotiations. And that's really what happened in 72. And what both countries got as a result of the Nixon visit was a Soviet Union that now had to think very carefully before it moved against one or the other.
We've talked about this as though it had these advantages, those advantages, this country wanted this, that country wanted the other. But how, in fact, did they bridge the gap? How did the discussions move forward that made it possible for this meeting to take place?
Well, it's a very good question, and it wasn't easy. I mean, if the Americans had simply said publicly to the Chinese, "We want to talk," the Chinese would quite likely have spurned them or not regarded it as a serious offer, and vice versa. And so to simply establish contact with the Chinese, and the initiative came from the American side, was a very delicate business. And it was done finally through highly secret channels, the most important of which was Pakistan, which was on good terms with both China and the United States. But it really was very difficult to do, and it took 2 years of very secret and very delicate negotiations.
Let's take just a moment to talk about the theater of this, if you will. What about the actual meeting itself of Nixon and Mao? We know no papers were signed, and in fact, I gather there really wasn't very much discussed, but it was theater of the first order.
Theater is part of international relations. Well, theater is part of human life, and the mere fact that Nixon had a meeting with Mao and that it was a friendly meeting and that both sides concluded that it had gone well was very, very important. And what was very important about the Nixon visit were all the symbols, Zhou Enlai and Nixon toasting each other at a banquet, Nixon on the Great Wall expressing admiration for the wonders of Chinese civilization and the accomplishments of the Chinese. So the theatrics and the symbolism of the visit, I think, was perhaps as important as what was actually discussed.
And of course, those are the images that we remember that helped to establish this as an event that, as you put it, changed the world. But what really has changed as a result of this trip? Is the world in a different place now than it would have been without this?
I think so. I mean, I think you could argue that the opening between the United States and China and the establishment of, by the end of the 1970s, a full relationship helped to bring about the end of the Cold War. It put a new sort of pressure on the Soviet Union. I think what that visit also did was establish a relationship where one might not have been established. I mean, it seems so obvious now, looking back, that the United States and China should have established a relationship. In some ways, you could say it seems equally obvious that the United States and Cuba should have a relationship, but they haven't. They haven't had one since the end of the 1950s. You could also argue, as a number of people are arguing, that it's pretty obvious that the United States and Iran should have some sort of relationship because they both have something at stake in the stability of the Middle East, and they could talk about that. But I don't think it's going to happen. And so I don't think just because the times are ripe for a change to occur, that change necessarily will happen. I think sometimes it takes human beings to make that come about.
Margaret McMillan. Her book is called Nixon and Mao, The Week That Changed the World.